The law allows the state to directly operate mobile sports betting. So the $500 million will go to the state.
Once the leagues have seen that there's money to be made, they drop many of their objections.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, I speak with an expert on gambling. David Schwartz is a professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who studies gambling, casinos, and Las Vegas history. I called him up after New York passed its $212 billion state budget, including, for the first time, the legalization of mobile sports betting. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it could generate up to $500 million in tax revenue a year. Part of that is winning back mobile sports betting business from neighboring New Jersey. While the budget punted the potential of new York City casinos until 2 years from now, the Gaming Commission is expected to issue sports betting licenses this year. Two providers will be licensed. What does New York's entry into the mobile sports betting industry mean for the larger industry, in your view?
Well, I think it's definitely, as a big state, it is a jurisdiction that a lot of companies would want to get into because they certainly have a lot of population.
Is this really a booming business, mobile sports betting?
Mobile sports betting is definitely expanding since the Supreme Court struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. Many states have legalized gaming, have legalized sports betting, and many of them have opted for mobile sports betting.
I guess the reasons for mobile sports betting might seem obvious. You don't have to, you know, drive to a specific building to place a sports wager. How widespread is the mobile aspect of sports gambling now around the country?
It's definitely becoming more widespread. We've had it in Nevada for many years, but a lot of other states, New Jersey and many other states, are adopting this because it just seems like it's a more convenient way for people to bet. They don't have to drive down to the sports book and park and do all that. They can just bet wherever they are while they're watching the game.
In terms of the overall gambling dollar, how big of a slice is mobile sports betting when we look at, you know, people spending money on any type of gambling?
Well, if you look at New Jersey, for example, in 2020, they made about $390 million in all sports betting, and that includes in-person and mobile. I don't have the numbers up in front of me right now to break that down, but it would definitely be a smaller number than that would be the mobile only. You know, Nevada made about $300 million or so. I believe they made about that much on sports betting last year as well, and mobile would be a significant chunk of that.
There's a casino right near here in Schenectady, New York, which opened a sports book after, as you say, the Supreme Court struck down the ban, which just recently got up and running. When mobile sports betting is allowed or expanded, does that hurt the physical spaces where sports gambling had taken place before?
It's hard to say if it does. You know, if you look at Nevada, where they do have sports betting, you know, mobile sports betting, but they also have destination betting where people come to Las Vegas just to bet, and they wouldn't, if they're not from Nevada, they wouldn't be able to bet if they weren't here. You know, there's been an increase in the amount bet since sports betting's become legal in other places. So it looks like that does broaden the funnel for people who come to bet in person.
In terms of, you know, just looking at the sports betting market, there's always concerns when gambling expands about saturation. Are we anywhere close to that with the mobile sports betting products that are available to individual users?
That's really hard to say, and I think that's a decision that the companies themselves would make if they want to invest significantly in the market, which, you know, there would probably be a fee to get involved, and then, of course, tax revenues and compliance and many other costs. You know, I think they would be able to make the determination if they think that there's room there, and if they decide to do it, they'll do it.
Talk to me about the intersection of the pro sports leagues with this industry. It's really, it seems, taken a 180-degree turn in recent years. Where you're speaking from in Las Vegas, there's now a pro hockey team, which was once unthinkable. Are the leagues really lining up to make sure they are in on the ground floor with sports betting?
Yeah, I think that's really accurate. You know, if you go back in time, even 10 years ago, The Las Vegas Visitors and Convention Authority couldn't even buy a Super Bowl ad just saying visit Las Vegas that didn't mention gambling at all. It had no images of gambling. That's how taboo it was. And now Las Vegas has an NFL team. The Raiders moved here. And there's talk about maybe a future Super Bowl being here. So it's definitely changed a lot. I think once the leagues have seen that there's money to be made, they drop many of their objections.
So you see that just continuing on. I mean, especially with this big state like New York coming on, we can just expect more integration with sports.
Yeah, you can. And if you looking around the leagues, a while back I did a little research where I just looked at official partners that teams have, and teams have dozens of official partners, and they have a lot of official partners in the sports betting and gambling space. Not just in Vegas, the teams everywhere.
Were there any unforeseen problems associated with the onset of mobile sports betting and that becoming a wider industry, that maybe we're not thinking about yet here in New York State?
Well, I think there's always problems. Certainly there's a potential for more problem gambling, for more disordered gambling, if people have more access to gambling. So that could be an issue. And, besides that, it would be just giving people more options, more convenience if they want to bet.
Have you looked at all on the effect of mobile sports betting on the horse racing industry, which is a huge industry here in our region, and they have had mobile horse wagering in place well before mobile sports betting was allowed?
Yeah, if you look at that, and I may be wrong in my numbers here, but I think last I checked, the horse racing industry nationally made, let's say, $2 billion from in-person handle, in-person betting, and about $13 billion from off-track betting, simulcast, and mobile betting. So it seems like that industry has really transitioned away from people having to bet at the track to being able to bet in other places. And I might be off in those numbers, but last I saw it was in that range.
As I speak with you, the casino that I mentioned nearby our studios just announced that its hotel will resume 24/7 operations after it had been severely limited because of the pandemic. How is the industry doing today in Las Vegas, and how is the national gambling industry doing, considering we're now in month 14 of COVID?
Well, the national industry recovered fairly quickly once the immediate closures were over. The regional casinos that were drawing from people closer by, maybe a car ride away, were doing pretty well before that. In some states, they were posting year-over-year increases, even in September, October. Las Vegas, of course, as a fly-in destination, as a fly-in market, has been affected much more severely and continues to be, although there is talk about more optimism. Casinos that had been closed during the week are now opening up. Hotels that had been closed during the week are opening up all week long. There's talk about the convention business coming back. So there does seem to be more optimism at this point.
How did you get interested in this area of study?
I grew up in Atlantic City, and one of my earliest memories is watching them blow up the old hotels and build casinos there. And just as a youngster, I was fascinated by the power of gambling and how could gambling knock down old buildings and build new ones. And when I got my PhD in U.S. history, I decided to study the historical evolution of the gaming industry.
Well, that's Dave Schwartz from UNLV. Thank you for taking some time for us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.